We'll allow each one of the candidates to introduce themselves and give a two-minute opening statement. And with that, we'll start with Roxanne Weber.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for having this forum today. I appreciate everybody who showed up. I have to start, though, by preempting Tim and say it is not good form to start at the bottom of the ballot and work your way up. It's not good. So you want to start at the top. So I'll give you a little bit of my background. I am a mother and a grandmother. I have my grandchild waiting to try and encourage your votes for later on, if you'd like to go ahead with that. And I'm a state employee. I work for the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications as a software engineer. I have a political science background. I have a public administration background. I've been kind of involved in politics for a very long time, but never thought I'd be sitting here. A couple of years ago, I kind of began to get more involved in politics. As you all know, things have changed a lot in the last couple of years, and I just decided this year that it was kind of time to quit complaining and start trying to do something about it. So here I am for that. Now, my political perspectives, if you will, I consider myself a progressive conservative. People think that sounds kind of weird, but for me, what that means is I'm a conservative Midwestern person. I was born and raised in South Dakota, and I have what everyone would consider Midwestern values. But I think that it's time for us to start looking at new solutions to some of our old challenges. I think that sometimes we focus too much on just doing a good enough job, and that we need to start focusing on trying to do better than that. I also wanted to talk about our largest industry. I don't know, the previous candidates talked about the industries here in Pierre, and actually, I'm not sure if you're aware, but one-third of the industry of Pierre is actually state or public employees, which is huge. But yet, these employees are the ones that end up getting on the bottom of the list. So I'd appreciate your vote, and thank you for having us.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Jamie, and to the chamber for organizing this. I came to Pierre 35 years ago, about this time of year, as an intern. In fact, that's where I first met Gloria Hansen. I had several internships following that, and during that time, I met one of those cute young engineers who works in the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. After college, those internships turned into a full-time job, and a couple years later, I married that engineer. He still works for the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. We will celebrate our 31st wedding anniversary in October. We love Central South Dakota. We are proud to call this area home. We are really thankful that we raised our two daughters here. 6 years ago, I was asked to run for the legislature, and after receiving encouragement from family and friends, I pursued that, and the voters were gracious enough to give me the job. I have served all 6 years on the Taxation Committee and the Transportation Committee. I'm currently chair of the House Transportation Committee. I've also served on a number of interim committees where the legislature does a deeper dive on specific issues. I've been on committees dealing with school funding, roads and bridges, county government and paying for law enforcement, ag land taxation. Last summer, I was part of the special committee that tried to balance the issue of property rights and recreational access to public water over private land. We came up with a compromise proposal that made everybody equally mad, so that's probably a pretty good compromise.
Probably.
This summer, I'm chairing a special committee on special education funding, the increased need for it, how we pay for it, and the impact on property taxes. My goal as a legislator has always been to listen to people's concerns, do the necessary research to understand the issue better, and then look to ways to work with others to find solutions that are good for South Dakota. And I look forward to your questions this evening.
And Kim.
And thank you, Greg, and thank you to the chamber for hosting us, and thank you for being here tonight, and for those that are watching. I am Tim Rounds. I came to Pierre in 1959 via the easy route. I was born and raised in Pierre. graduated from Pierre High School, went off to college, Black Hills State University. Well, it was a college back then, university now. I majored in political science and economics. Out of college, I went to work as an independent claims adjuster. I started in Sioux Falls, worked a bit there, worked a bit in Chamberlain, worked for 12 years in Aberdeen. In 1996, I wanted to come back home, and I moved back to Pierre. The reason why I talk about this is that I've traveled and worked all across South Dakota. My territories took me from Rosholt up in the northeast to Edgemont in the southwest, down in Union County and up to Lemon. I traveled the state, and I've worked everywhere in between. I met with people at time of crisis. I know South Dakota. The same job that I had then, I have now. I've been working mainly in central South Dakota. I know District 24. I know Hughes County. I know Sully County. I know Stanley County and Hyde County. I work with people. I work with farmers. I work with ranchers, small business people, elderly. I work with people in District 24. A lot of time is a time of crisis when they have an insurance claim. We work with them. I started in the legislature in 2003. I sat out for 2 years in 2011-2012 because of term limits. I was reelected, and now I'm asking for your vote again. This will, if I'm fortunate to be elected, will be my last term. I served as a committee chair for House Commerce for 8 years. I served as chair of the Retirement Laws Committee. I've been on that committee every year I've been here, and I've also served as chair of local government. I'm asking for your vote on June 5th. Thank you.
Our first question, we'll start with Mary. And each one of you in your opening statements touched on this a little bit, but tell us a little bit about your community involvement and how your community involvement has kind of helped shape you in terms of your involvement with local organizations and how that's relevant to your service in the legislature.
That's kind of a broad question. Thank you. Community involvement, for my husband and me, both of us, we are very involved with our church. That's kind of what a lot of our social life does revolve around. We've helped with various ministries, youth ministries, Vacation Bible School. We've done the skit at Vacation Bible School every year for 20-some years, and we'll be doing that again in a couple of weeks. I also volunteer as a fitness instructor at the YMCA. And my husband and I just try to do what we can to help the community, to give back to our neighbors. Through that time, I've had the chance to get to know Central South Dakotans. They're great people. I've had a chance to get to know state employees and what their issues are. And so I think all of that has really created in me a desire and a passion to give back. And that's why I consider legislature as public service giving back. My goal as a legislator has never been driven by a personal agenda, but it's always been about listening to people and doing what we can to help them.
Tim.
I've been involved in every community that I've lived in South Dakota. Like I said, out of college, I was involved up in Spearfish where I went to school. We built ramps for people in wheelchairs. That was a project I did every year I was out there. When I moved to Aberdeen, I really got involved in the city up there. I joined a service club called Exchange Club, and during my time with them, I moved up the ranks to be club president, and after that, I was district president, which was North and South Dakota. I was very proud to be part of the programs we had. Prevention of child abuse was one of the big ones. Americanism was a big one, fire prevention. We worked throughout the community, and when I came to Pierre, I stayed with the Exchange Club. And being involved in the community is very important to me. I've stayed involved in educational things here in Pierre. Whenever they need a fundraiser, they need help at a fundraiser, whenever they have a hoop shoot at halftime of a basketball game, they always call on me to step out there. I think that's important to give back to your community. I give back to the communities I live in. It just makes life a lot better, and I feel good about it. And I think that kind of leads into my political end. I enjoy the work I do making life better in South Dakota.
Roxanne.
Okay. Well, I'm newer to the Pierre area. But one thing that I noticed when I first moved here was that I was amazed at the close-knit mentality of the community. I'd just never seen that anywhere else that I had been before. There's a child that needs help because they need medical medical expenses, and people are rallying around to do fundraisers. At the Knight Building, there's always fundraising notices up, and we're constantly doing different community efforts in the area, and I just love that about this area. I will say, though, that since I've been here, I've been one of the, I guess, local rebels in the area. I have been active in trying to point out some of the issues that have been going on in the state and elsewhere. I was really involved in IM-22. I strongly disagreed with the legislature handling that issue the way they did. And so I got personally involved in a lot of those efforts. So I guess most of the community effort that I've had since I've moved here has been around some advocacy for issues that I think people really need to start looking at. I think that a lot of people sometimes get a little lethargic when it comes to politics and just don't want to deal with it. And sometimes we just need to point it out to them. I guess the other thing is, as far as my social life, Jim knows everybody, so that's how I that's how I network and meet new people. So, thank you.
Okay. We'll start our next question with Tim. Dr. Gloat, listen up, because this one's about education. One of the big topics every year is funding for education. What is your vision for education funding in South Dakota, and what should South Dakota's next governor prioritize for K-12 education?
Who's first? Sorry.
We're going to start here.
Okay.
First off, South Dakota has always balanced her budget, and I'm going to explain how the budget process is. 50% of our budget in South Dakota goes towards education. 50%, 35% goes towards helping those that can't help themselves, 11% goes to law enforcement. That leaves what's left for the rest of state government. We do put a lot of money into education in South Dakota. We're going to have a summer study this year, and as you heard from Representative Duvall, that she's going to chair it on special education funding to see if there is adequate funding there. It would be nice if at some point we can get rid of being reliant on gambling dollars, find another source of revenue, and be able to put 60 to 70% of the amount of education instead of relying on the local effort. But that isn't going to happen for a while, and there's just no quick fix on that. We need to keep increasing the state's numbers towards education funding, take the load off the local property taxpayer. Let the local school districts set their budgets, you know, what they need, and we got to work with that. You know, Pure does a very good job. We meet with them every year. They do an excellent job with what little dollars they have. But we need to take a look at the whole state, the big picture, and try and get the state to put more money in as opposed to property taxes.
Roxanne.
Yeah, this is a really important one to me. First of all, I believe that, I just read an article the other day that said South Dakota actually spends the same amount on education as Zimbabwe, which, if you don't know what that is, it's a southern African state that or country that actually ended up switching their currency from their own currency to the United States currency because of rampant inflation. So I don't think that bodes very well for South Dakota. We're at the bottom in terms of spending on education. But it is tricky to find the right places to pull education from. I think that we need to find a diversity. I think Tim is correct that we can't rely exclusively on lottery and property taxes. I think that the other thing that's important when it comes to looking at solutions for education in general, whether you're talking about financing or how well we're doing, I've talked to someone who had indicated that often what happens with the state is they create a one-size size fits all for all of the schools in the state. And the individual I spoke with said that just doesn't work. There's so many differences. We really need to look at how we can differentiate, especially our rural areas, which are losing population, from the urban areas, which are going to struggle with increases in population they may or may not be ready for. So I think we have a lot of challenges ahead, but I still feel that South Dakota has one of the best education systems. So there's a lot of good.
Mary.
Thanks, Greg. The Constitution requires us to provide education opportunities for K-12, and I think South Dakota does a good job. We turn out some really top-notch students, and especially here in Pierre. I think that my daughter's got a far more rigorous education than I did 30 years prior. So kudos to Dr. Gloat. About half of every general fund dollar goes to education. About half of your property taxes go to fund K-12 education. So it is the biggest chunk of our general fund and your property taxes. I think we need to find ways for schools, districts, to find efficiencies, to work together in different areas. It's a bit astonishing to me that we have 155 different school districts in South Dakota, especially in some of the rural areas where those schools are getting smaller and smaller. That's a really politically unpopular thing to say, but I think schools, you need to be given the flexibility and the latitude to figure out what efficiencies you can find and how you can work together. But the bottom line is, I think that we need to continue doing a good job of ensuring that we're preparing the next generation to lead South Dakota and to compete in a global economy.
Okay. Our next question, we'll start with Roxanne. State employee salaries have always been a key issue for this district. How would you be able to change the discussion to move the needle so that what has been done in the past to fight for annual pay raises for state employees can be changed going forward?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good topic. Thank you. This is really important because I don't know if people realize that in Pierre alone, I mentioned it earlier, so I hope you do, one-third of our industry is public and state employees, and that's a significant amount of income generation, and it's something that we shouldn't leave to the bottom of the list, which often happens with the state legislature. This year, I believe state legislators got a 70% raise, and state employees got 1.2. State legislature also gave themselves a COLA allowance increase, which the state employees had pushed for, but it got killed in committee. So I think that we need to look at state and public employees as more of a priority in this district, especially because of the large number of public workers that we have. I'm not saying that there's going to be a solution that everyone is going to agree on, but I do think that we definitely need to look at prioritizing those individuals in this district higher than we have in the past. Thank you.
Mary.
I think this past session it was encouraging to me because as I talked with other legislators and made the point that we have to pay state employees a competitive salary if we expect to have good people working for state government, and we cannot expect them to go year after year with no salary increase. And that message resonated with them. It didn't resonate with them as much as some might have liked, but the point was made that we cannot balance the state budget on the backs of state employees. With regard to state legislator salaries, to compare a 70% increase over a 20-year lifetime since the last time salaries for legislators were adjusted versus the last 2 years for state employees is a bit skewed, but I would like to point out that both Representative Rounds and Representative Duvall voted twice against that salary increase for state legislators because, for me, that was a non-starter until we took care of state employees. The bottom line is we need to pay state employees a competitive salary if we want good people working for us, and we do.
Tim.
I'm going to follow up with what Representative Ball talked about is the conversations we have with other legislators. We have groups of legislators that are up in the Capitol that believe that state employees should donate their time. I mean, seriously, that was some of the attitudes they faced. We are able to get a bigger consensus every year. This was a topic back in 2003 when I first came into the legislature, because they had, in the 90s, they had went zero, and with a zero increase for a year, they balanced a budget on the backs of state employees. And as time went on, we started getting some 3% and a little bit better increases. But in this past couple of years, that keeps pushed back into us from some of these other legislators saying, well, you've been getting 2.5-3%, where private industry's not been getting that much. And we've had that debate back and forth. That's what we need to do. We need to win 36 House members. We need to win 18 Senate members to be able to get these salaries turned around. They're kind of putting education, community support providers, and state employees against each other is what's happening, is they're pitting them, because there isn't a lot of money left at the end of the day, and they're trying to split that up. If we can get a consensus of legislators in there, we can do something to maybe get state employees decent raises, and that's our goal.
Can I have a short rebuttal?
Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to point out that I do agree that legislators, they did deserve a raise. There's no question about that. Did they deserve a 70% raise in 1 year? I don't know. But the real issue here is that while legislators were eager to give themselves a COLA increase every year, for state employees, it didn't even get past committee. I just feel like in this district, with an industry of one-third of state and public employees, that maybe we should just try something different and try a little harder to make the improvements that the legislators are speaking of. Thank you.
Our next question, we'll start with Mary. Workforce is a major issue in District 24, as well as across the rest of South Dakota. What is our state doing right when it comes to workforce development, and where can we make some improvements?
I attended the governor's workforce development summit last summer in Sioux Falls, and it was fascinating to me. One of the biggest things they talked about is the fact that the student debt today is just breathtaking. It exceeds all the credit card debt, car loans, home loans. It's phenomenal. And so the push was to make the point to parents and grandparents and students that not everybody needs a four-year baccalaureate degree, that their technical education opportunities are really a good option for some students. And so I really applaud what the governor has done as far as trying to promote technical education. We've created a board of technical education this a year ago to try to figure out what technical education needs are and how we fund them. I think that's a positive thing that we can do.
Tim.
Workforce development, in my mind, is more and larger families. We need workers in this state. We need people to come into South Dakota, and how do we do that? Well, I thought we started off very well back in the early 2000s when we started putting more emphasis on our university systems. Maybe we can draw some more students, young people from across the borders into South Dakota to attend college, our universities. And some of that is paying off, but I don't think it's paying off enough. When they attend school at Brookings or at University of South Dakota, generally they stay close by. A lot of them do stay close by. Now, I heard this new mayor of Sioux Falls brought up this same point, and I'm glad to hear him bring it up. There's a shortage of workers. Finally, now Sioux Falls is facing that problem. We've been facing it here in Pierre for a number of years. We need to bring in a technical school, and I think Pierre needs something like that to keep young people here, and if they stay around here to go to school, they'll stay here and raise their families. That's what we need here in Central South Dakota, but we need that all over the state.
Roxanne.
Yes. Well, I think that one of the issues that we have in this area is that we have a blessing and a curse in our Midwestern culture. And what I mean by that is that we're kind of laid back. We kind of like to go with the flow. We don't care if the pool is done this year or next year. I think some of these young folks are more for the, you know, we need to have some action going on. And there's not a lot of that around here, at least according to some folks. The other thing, one of the other candidates had mentioned it earlier, was allowing remote work to move to other places. The state employees, I can't even tell you in the last 4 or 5 months how many people we've lost to Sioux Falls and Rapid City. They still work for the state. We're still paying their salaries, but they're living in other communities that they, quote-unquote, prefer. And I think that's a bad thing for Pierre. I don't think we should force people to stay here. I'm not suggesting that. But I do think we need to make it more of an incentive for people to stay. The other thing is with our young workforce, we have hundreds of high schoolers that are graduating every year. We need to find incentives to keep them here, because like Tim said, if they stay here for a year, they're going to find a cute little girl or a cute little guy, and they're going to get married and hopefully have a family here. You know, some of those incentives might not keep them here forever, but if we can keep people here long enough to get some of the work done and have a knowledge base so that we can allow for people coming in and out of our system, I think that would be very helpful. Thank you.
We'll start our next question with Tim. This year, there will be several proposed constitutional amendments and initiated measures on both the primary and general election ballot. Please highlight your thoughts on the one particular ballot issue that you think is most important to South Dakota voters and why.
Well, the first one we're going to address is the fixes to Marcy's Law, which will be on the primary ballot. I'm just going to address that one for the short term because that's coming up next week. Marcy's Law did cause some problems. The people voted for it, so we needed to have some protections for the victims out there. But I think Marcy's Law, I think people agree, it went too far. Some people say, well, let's scrap it completely. And I think what the amendment does is it will make some tweaks to it, which won't make it as bad. Now, coming in November, we've got a lot of initiated measures. We've got there's an amendment or two for the Constitution. I'm kind of putting those aside. I've looked at a few of them. I'm kind of the order that, you know, let's have a little bit of debate on these before we put them on the ballot, because like we found out last or 2 years ago, and I'm going to bring it up, I am 22, it was just unconstitutional. It was bad for South Dakota. We should be encouraging more people to run for the legislature instead of trying to decrease the number of people running for the legislature, and that's what it did. But it was unconstitutional in so many ways. We need a way that we can say, hey, let's fix this and let's put it on the ballot that way, because what we vote for, if it goes into the Constitution, we're going to have major problems.
Roxanne.
Yeah. I'd like to touch on Marcy's Law. I also think that it's a very important one, and if only for the reason of allowing county and city governments to not have to expend huge resources for something that we may or may not feel is worth the money. From my understanding, the people who drafted Marcy's Law are in favor of this bill. I understand that that the bill really doesn't lower victims' rights, it just tweaks the process. So I think that that's something personally that I'm going to be in favor of, so I'll probably vote for that to pass. And I would encourage others to learn whatever they need to make that decision for themselves. And I'm going to say, as far as the general ballot, I think I'm more concerned about the legislature having gutted some of the initiated measure process this past year. It really concerns me. As the state that was the first one to implement the process, the fact that our legislature has purposefully tried to make this process much more difficult just scares the life out of me. It's one thing to put in a few measures that try and make the process more efficient or try and make it less expensive. It's quite another to make it nearly impossible for anyone in the state to actually be able to to participate in the process at all. So I think that's a big issue. Thank you.
Mary.
Well, not to pile on, but the changes that are proposed to Marcy's law are really trying to address some drafting errors that were in the initial measure that was adopted 2 years ago. It's possible that some of the law enforcement and media overreacted as they tried to figure out exactly how to implement the measure. But the proposals that are changed try to preserve the intent of what the voters said, but it changes the victim's rights to an opt-in option instead of just a blanket for everyone. It is supposed to save counties some money if we do this. It's supported by the County Commissioners Association. It's supported by the media groups across the state. So that's the one that will be on the June 5th ballot. The concern that we have with the initiated measure process in South Dakota is trying to improve the integrity of the process for South Dakotans without becoming a testing ground for out-of-state groups. And so that is what the legislature has tried to do with the measures that the voters will get to vote on in November. We hope they make sense, but the goal is not to try to stifle voters, but to make sure that this is something that works well for South Dakotans.
Could I just have a quick rebuttal, please?
Quick rebuttal.
Okay. I just want to say that the way they went about it is by making it nearly impossible for anyone to want to volunteer to be a petitioner. So what this means is that you would have to rely on out-of-state monies in order to be able to hire enough people that are willing to provide their birth date, their driver's license, their email address, practically their bank statements, in order to be able to pass petition around in the state. So that is one of my huge concerns about that.
I see. Chomping at the bit for more rebuttal.
Well, I would like to point out that both Representative Rounds and Representative Duvall voted against that particular measure also.
Thank you.
Both said. All right. Our next question, we'll start with Roxanne. Much like the rest of the country, South Dakota is facing significant challenges with opioid addiction, which can be connected to other major issues such as mental health care and crime rates. What can state government do to address these issues either individually or collectively?
Mm-hmm. You know, I honestly believe this is something that we need to let communities work on. I think that every community knows better what would work best in their community. As far as how the state could help, clearly we could try and provide more assistance financially for some of the programs. I think the focus really with drugs is not drugs. One of the candidates said earlier something to the effect of, go away, go to jail, if you're going to do that kind of stuff. And I think they don't realize that addiction itself is not just about this person being a bad person. And I think we need to not think about it that way and instead look at it as a mental health issue. And oftentimes we can avoid these people going to jail if we can instead focus on how we can help them improve their lives. And there's some people you are never going to reach, and they are never going to overcome their addiction. Clearly, some of those people may need to go to jail if they're harming other people, if they're harming the community. But other than that, I think that communities are in a much better position than the state telling them what they should be doing in terms of how to handle that issue. Thank you.
Mary.
There was a proposal this past session to require doctors or to limit the amount of time doctors could prescribe opioids for. And it's an intriguing concept, but I don't think that the legislature is in a particularly good position to tell doctors how to prescribe medicine. That being said, I honestly think the medical community needs to do a better job of communicating with doctors to limit the prescriptions of opioids, to let people know that, you might hurt a little bit after surgery or whatever. We'll get you through the first few days, and then we'll figure out other ways to help you deal with your pain. I also read that there are formulas for painkillers that are less addictive. And so I think there are options out there, but I don't think that the legislature holds the key for making medical decisions for South Dakotans.
Tim.
Back in the 60s and 70s, we had LSD, and then we went from there to cocaine, and then we went to crack, and then we went to meth, and now we're to opioids. You got to dig deeper and take a look at this and understand that people have addictions, whether it's to one drug or the other. And here we're going to get back to a discussion we had previously of funding between education, state employees, taking people or taking care of those who can't take care of themselves. That would be human services. We need a better program in human services for these people that are addicted. We need law enforcement to step up and cut off the supply of these things. I know we're only talking opioids, but meth is a huge problem, and it's coming in from Mexico so cheap they don't make it here anymore. They used to be out there hunting for these meth labs in South Dakota, and now it's just shipped up from Mexico. There are people who get addicted, whether it's to one form of drug or another. We need services in this state to take care of these addictions. We can't afford it in South Dakota. We need to improve our human services by getting some money somehow. How do we get more money? Raising taxes is the answer, and now we're going to lead into another thing. We need to get more taxpayers. That is, more people in South Dakota that are working and providing and buying things. We need to fund some of these programs for addictions.
Okay. We have a question from the audience, and it came up in an earlier forum, and it's very similar to the question that was asked earlier. Two bills were introduced this year to increase the tax on alcoholic beverages and use the revenue for alcohol treatment programs for adults and youth. If similar bills were introduced in the 2019 session, how would you view them and would you support them? And we'll start with Mary. Sorry.
A couple of years ago, I was involved with a bill to shift more of the state's alcohol tax revenue to counties. It was successful, but not without much whining and gnashing of teeth on the part of the state budget director. And I was shocked because the amount of money, when you looked at the entire state budget, was about a rounding error. But it was important for counties to do that. I am not opposed to an alcohol beverage tax to help counties with some of their expenses. Every time it's brought up, it was mentioned earlier, the alcohol lobby comes unglued. I think some of their arguments are a bit specious. The fact that, you know, if we raise the alcohol tax, which hasn't been raised in 20-some years, is going to suddenly drive purchasers out of state. I don't buy that. So short answer is, yeah, I'd support it.
Tim.
Any tax increase in South Dakota is tough to do. And I don't think an alcohol tax will pass. It may. It'll be close. I will not support it. We've been, you know, with the road tax here a few years ago and then with the half-cent sales tax, I'm hearing from people who are tired of taxes. That's why I said we need more taxpayers, not more taxes. And there is some truth to, you look where the population centers are in South Dakota, Sioux Falls, along the I-29 corridor, out west, Black Hills, down on the southern border. These other states do not tax alcohol like South Dakota does. And yeah, sure, maybe not. Representative Duvall brought it up. Maybe they won't go over there, but there's a good chance that they're going to, you know, they'll run across the state and purchase their alcohol over there. Where will we be then? It's going to be tough to get any tax increase for the next few years in South Dakota, and I just don't see it happening.
Well, I don't know if my answer is going to get Dave Braun's vote or not, but I guess I'll give it a try. I think this is a tough issue because on the one hand, there have been some states who have played around with taxing fountain sodas, and the results are it actually works to reduce the amount of fountain sodas that people are drinking. But then on the other hand, do we have the right to tell people what is or isn't in their best interest and whether or not they can have what they want? As an ex-smoker for over 15 or 16 years, I can tell you that I'm not sure it would have mattered what the cost of cigarettes were at the time, because again, we're dealing with an addiction, and it's not about being logical, and it's not about knowing whether or not this makes sense financially. It's about being addicted to something that could cause harm to your health. Whether or not I would pass something like this, I think it really it's really going to depend on what it is. I think that there's not only an issue of the tax increase and the tax people are going to have to pay, but there are other stakeholders involved. What about the local grocery store who's going to be losing a lot of revenue because you're not buying as many cigarettes? I mean, I know that sounds bad. I don't want to buy cigarettes, and a lot of people don't, but there are people. That's their wish and their desire. Do you tell them that that they can't? Well, clearly we haven't done that and won't probably do that. But on the other hand, we have to look at the diverse results of making that change as well. Thank you.
Okay. And our last question, we'll start this with Tim. For the first time in 8 years, there will be a new leader of the executive branch in South Dakota. We'll have a new governor. How would you work with the new governor, and from what you know of their priorities, how do you expect those priorities and their issues will impact the voters of District 24?
The three major candidates right now, there's two on the Republican side, Marty Jackley and Christy Noem, and on the Democrat side, Billy Sutton. I know each and every one of them very close. I've worked with them all. Christy Noem was my seatmate for a couple of years. Marty Jackley's my neighbor. And Billy Sutton and I worked on a lot, several pieces of legislation. I would not have a problem working with any one of them. I'm very proud of the fact that we've got some very good candidates expressing an interest in running this state. I'd be willing to, of course, I'm leaning towards, Marty and Christy. But if Billy got elected, I would work with him just the same. There's a history there. I know these people personally. I know a lot about them. They know about me. I don't see a problem at all.
Roxanne.
I think we live in one of the best countries in the world. And the reason that I believe that is because we have had an ongoing democracy. And despite the fact that we may disagree, and sometimes I disagree very vehemently with some of our presidents, though we may have this kind of disagreement with them, they are still our leaders. And the same would go for any of our state governors that would be chosen, whether it be any of the two Republican candidates or myself. I think as a moderate candidate, I would probably not agree with anything from any of them. I would probably have some differences of opinion with all three of them. But would I be able to work with any one of them to come up with a compromise? Absolutely, because that's what I feel is my strength as a candidate, is the ability to see the middle ground, the ability to stop us from looking at simply one side or the other. I think that's lacking in our government, both state and federally, and I think that's something we need to move towards more than we already are. As far as their priorities go, I think that all three candidates have the state's interests at heart. I think while they may differ on how they're going to go about achieving those priorities, I think that that they all believe that this state is one of the best states in the country, and I would agree with that. So thank you.
And Mary.
It's really hard to add to either of those. The three major candidates, I think, are all good people. I think they're very sincere, that they care about South Dakota. And if you look at them, they have a lot of very similar values. I've worked with them, and I've found them all to be reasonable to work with, just like our current governor has been. Like Roxanne said, we really are blessed that in this country the voters do get to pick who represents them.
That's the time we have for our question phase of this forum. We'll now go to our closing statements. And since we started with Roxanne and worked our way down, for the closing statements, we'll start with Tim and work our way back. You have two minutes.
Thank you, Greg, and thanks to the chamber for having this. My wife could not be here tonight. She's at a conference out of town. Kristen, I know you're listening. Hello, and thank you for listening. That's important to give your dues to the people that really mean a lot to you. I'm asking for your vote on June 5th. I think I have represented this district well. I've got leadership experience in the legislature. I've been the chair of, for the 14 years I've been in the legislature, I've been on two committees every one of those years, one of them being Commerce. Out of those 14 years, I've chaired Commerce Committee 8 years. I've been on Retirement Laws Committee all 14 years. I've chaired that one. I chaired it for 4 years, and then I just stayed on the committee after that. I've been very involved in the retirement system for the state employees for the state of South Dakota. It's the best one in the country. And I'd like to say I've had a hand in keeping it that way over the past 14 years. I'm very pro-life. I'm pro-Second Amendment. I got the NRA endorsement. Just came in this week. I believe that South Dakota is one of the best places, if not the best place, to live in this country. And it is the quality of life. It's the people that are here. We heard the talk about the people that are running for governor. They're all quality people. All the people that were up here tonight, people running for county commission, the people running for city commission, and my two opponents here, very quality people. We're blessed to live in South Dakota. I want to make South Dakota better. I'm asking for your vote. Here it is. Third thing down. I'm the third name on the ballot. Tim Rowell, start at the bottom, work your way up. Thank you.
The legislature outlawed visual props a couple of years ago. So. Mary.
Thank you, Greg, for moderating tonight, and to the chamber again for hosting us. I would also like to thank that cute engineer who did sneak in late. He had church business that he was working on tonight and got here hopefully as quickly as he could, but thank you for that. It has been a privilege to represent this district for the past 6 years. I love South Dakota. I believe in public service. Some of the accomplishments that I can point to over the past 6 years are things that I've done to start taking care of some of our infrastructure needs. Some of those had been neglected, and we're starting to address those. I've been working to help other legislators understand and appreciate the value of our state employees. I've supported efforts to protect the integrity of our state retirement system. As Tim mentioned, it is one of the premier retirement systems in the nation, and we should be proud of that. And this past session, I brought in several bills to get rid of some outdated statutes and to bring some other statutes into the 21st century. I'm looking forward to what the interim committees are going to do this summer, dealing with special education. Another one that we're working on is access to mental health services in the state. We will also see the results of the 2-year study on how we assess agricultural land. As we talk about property taxes, it's an issue. It's an even bigger issue that we're hearing more and more about all the time. So we're digging into these issues to try to figure out how to solve them. I'd like to thank my family and friends and colleagues for their support over the past 6 years and also over the past few weeks as I've been campaigning. And again, thank the chamber. I'd like to thank the voters who gave me the job and for all of you sticking with us all night long. And again, I ask for your vote on June 5th. Thank you.
And finally, Roxanne.
Okay. I have the unenviable position of having two opponents that I actually don't have a lot of issues with. It would be much easier if I didn't like them or if they had done everything incorrectly during legislature, and then I could just, you know, pummel them with complaints. But that's not the case. They are great people. I think they've done a good job. But I do feel that we could be doing more. And while I don't have 14 plus years of experience, I think what I have is outside of the box thinking and perspective. I think I have a moderate perspective that tries to bring people together and find a compromise. I don't believe in one-sided viewpoints. I tire of the labels that we have to stay standby all the time politically. I feel like as a country, as a state, that we should start talking to each other more about coming together on some of our priority issues. We need to be proactive in our legislation. We have a lot of challenges coming up that are new because of changing technology, because of changes in our rural areas diminishing and our school districts having issues with funding because it's competing with so many other things. We need to be thinking about these things in a new way. We can't keep doing things the way we've always been doing them. So I think that is the advantage that I have as a candidate. I would love to have your support on June 5th. If you need any support, encouragement in voting for me, my grandson will be available after we're done here. To shower you with hugs, probably. I don't know. We'll have to talk to him about that. But I also like to thank Jim, who's been just a wonderful campaign manager for me. I couldn't have asked for better. And, of course, he knows a lot of people, so that helps. So I'm looking forward to the election on the 5th. I hope that I have your vote. But thank you very much for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would, please give these candidates a round of applause.